we all know that the recreational numbers have changed. The MRIP, the Marine Recreational Information Program, the recreational harvest estimates have changed. So that's really thrown a monkey wrench into the usual process. Summer flounder just went through a stock assessment. Looks like everything is doing fine. The official results will be presented at the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council in February. But what's happened is when the recreational harvest estimates went up, it's changed the whole scale of the population. It's changed how productive the stock is. It's changed how big the stock is, our understanding of how big the stock is. And right now, a few years ago, NIMS set quotas for the next 3 years based on the old numbers. And so right now we have a harvest estimate, a quota for next year that's based on the whole old harvest estimates. Yeah. With this new stock assessment, it's changed everything. It looks like everything is going to go up. Again, those are the unofficial
results.
Now,
when you say up, what do you mean by up?
Well, the stock has gotten bigger. It's probable. Our understanding of how big the stock is has gotten bigger.
Yeah.
It's probable that our quota will go up. We won't know that until February.
Okay.
It could stay the same.
But your sense is that maybe
it'll go up. Right.
Oh, okay.
Which means we, the state, can't set regulations for definite until we know what those new numbers are.
Yeah.
So we're sort of in a holding pattern right now.
Well, we just say if ask Bob Rush to come in and change the whole thing at a meeting like he did the last time, you know, and then of course he put New Jersey behind in the, you know, kind of behind the eight ball, though. But I guess you would say, to use a cliche, because it seems like some of the other states didn't appreciate what happened a couple of years ago.
They did not. Yeah. They did not.
Well, you've attended some of those meetings, and I know, Jeff, you do quite a bit. Are you going to this meeting next week?
I will not be at next week's meeting. I'll be calling in, but the administrator for Marine Fisheries, Joe Cimino, will be there.
Oh, okay, cool. So we'll stay with representative.
Yep. Yeah, so we have...
You usually do, right? I mean, somebody from the state goes...
Joe. Joe's been going for the last year. He started here about a year ago. Adam Nowalski is one of our representatives, and Peter Hughes is also one of our representatives.
Oh, okay.
So...
For some reason, I thought Russ Allen was going to this one, but I didn't.
So he may be at – there's two meetings. There's only one meeting next week, but there's two meetings in February. Next week is just the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council.
Yeah.
And then in February, there's back-to-back Atlantic States Marine Fisheries, and I understand Russ might be going to that one.
Okay, so that's maybe the one I heard of.
And then followed the next week by a second Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council.
Yeah, Robin is on one of those advisory boards. Bill, you know which one?
Mid-Atlantic.
Mid-Atlantic?
Mid-Atlantic.
Okay. Yeah, that's where she calls.
Yeah, I'm on the ASMSC, and there's a meeting coming up next week or something like that.
Yeah.
A web meeting.
Yeah. The 15th. Is it 15th? No,
that's for summer flounder.
Summer flounder and sea bass.
Okay.
And scup,
yeah.
Let me make sure. It's Tuesday and Wednesday in Annapolis. Yeah.
That'll be a joint meeting with the Mid-Atlantic Council. Well, yes.
There's one day, I think, when they have meetings together, yeah. And summer flounder, black sea bass, and scup are on the agenda. So, and one other thing that was on there I thought was pretty cool is they actually had a discussion on slot fish, which is what Bill in particular has been advocating for years, really.
Right.
And it seems like people are at least putting it on the agenda now. I don't know where it's going to go, but that's the first time I saw that listed on the agenda.
Well, it's been an option for 4 or 5 years, but nobody set up to it.
Well, except it's been an option for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, but there's nothing in the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. There's nothing in the federal plan that allows slot limits. Right. They manage to a minimum size limit.
Right.
There's nothing that says they can manage to a maximum size limit. So there's an addendum out there right now. They'll be voting on it next week, final action next week, to give the Mid-Atlantic Council, to give National Marine Fisheries Service the ability to manage using slot limits. Because, I mean, even if New Jersey wanted to do a slot limit, we could only implement a slot limit in state waters now.
Right.
So,
good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
How are you?
How are you doing?
Excellent.
Robin Scott's joining us. You dressed for the winter? The winter scene here?
Yeah. Seasonal.
I have that's right. Snowflakes on, but I have flounder earrings for Jeff.
Of course.
Yes, they're all for you. These are flounder fried.
You don't have the full bodysuit like last time I saw you.
No, I don't have the normal armor on. Mm-hmm. Protected by summer flounder. That's how I make my living.
Good.
So what are we talking about? So what is it? Explain to you exactly what is a slot fish. What's it? What's it mean exactly? Yeah, you know, we've been talking about it. We've been talking about it for years. But you know, people might not understand what it is. So what is a slot? What does it mean exactly?
Well, in my definition, the slot is a size limit under the stated limit, like 15 to 17 inches or 15 to 18 inches or something like that. And then you can have one or two over the 18-inch size. The issue in my mind is that male flounder are gone. 99% of them are gone by the time they get to 18 inches. And that's been confirmed now by two or three different scientists that I've read.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about it, sure.
And, you know, people are going out, and, you know, they're going to catch 30 or 40 flounder maybe, and all but one of them is going to go in a box.
Because
30% are going back dead.
So we have – what's the limit? So we have three fish limit. And so two fish would be over the limit, and then there'd be the slot fish would be one that could be kept under that. Is that what we're saying?
There are a number of ways you can do it. You can, so as Bill said, a slot limit is you have a minimum size limit and a maximum size limit, and a true slot is you keep all of your fish within that minimum to maximum size limit. So if we have a 15 to 18 inch minimum or 15 inch minimum and an 18 inch maximum. You can keep any fish between 15 inches and 17.999999 inches. Not that anyone's measuring them like that. There are options where you could do sort of like the striped bass bonus fish. So you have, say, two within the slot and one above.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there are an infinite number of ways that you can set it up. But a true slot is between the minimum and less than the maximum.
Cool.
We have looked at it at the state.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that getting any traction within the state?
Well,
are we pushing for it, or are we just...
Right. So the New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council has requested a couple of meetings about it. We've done some analysis. We actually had a meeting with our advisors back in, I think it was August? No, September, looking at a slot limit. And the problem is right now... If you look at the size distribution of the fish that we have offshore New Jersey right now, we have boatloads of fish right up into our minimum size of 18 inches, and then the population drops off because we've harvested most of the large fish.
Yeah. Females, breeders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we went to a slot limit of, say, if we drop that size limit, even if it's just dropping the size limit using just a minimum size, we have so many fish out there right now at 16, 16 and a half, 17 inches that our season would have to be so short because we'd catch – everyone would go out and everyone would catch a keeper. And the harvest would go up very quickly.
So the harvest percentage would go up.
Right, right. So the only three things that you have to manage a recreational fishery is size limit, bag limit, and season length. So if we drop our size limit – we either have to drop our bag limit and or our season length to keep within our quota.
Okay.
That is as the management stands now. However, that is annihilating the fishery, as Bill has been talking about for years. When there was a 13-inch size limit, all the way up to 17 inches, the stock grew. It hit 17 flatline, 17 and a half. And then 18-inch when we started, as you know, Jeff, as we started targeting the female breeders, that's when we annihilated the fishery. So putting the slot in would right-size our take again. See, I keep hearing this about we have to limit the season. No, we don't. Because what happens is last week's meeting up in Manahawkin, we were talking about, and I've stopped calling them slots or anything else, they're all mortality fish. The estimate in July, which we were riding at about 30% for the fish that you catch right now, targeting those 18-inch fish, which actually a lot of people do get their three at 2.5 pounds apiece. That's where I go with the weight. I estimate, or we estimate, or this is what I've heard, a 16-incher is about a pound, pound and a half. So if you get three 16.5-inchers or three 16-inchers, that's a couple pounds. If you get three 18-inchers, we're talking major weight here. So I don't see that, number one. I think that's Mythbusters, number one, that we absolutely have to get straight in management here. And the other thing is we have to stop talking about them as slots and 15 to 18s. They're all mortality fish getting to that 18-inch fish. So we have gotten ourselves in this situation, and the way to get ourselves out of it is to do the slots. So we're taking back to July, water temperature. I'm quoting Bill Schillingford, like chapter and verse. If I don't, he will make bad faces at me. So I'm trying to behave myself. And in July, you know, all of our big fish come at least to South Jersey between April. They stay for 8 to 10 weeks. Then they go back out to the continental shelf to spawn or 40 to 80 miles out. We have the small fish come in boatloads. I mean, literally, I'll talk about my, somebody said to me last week on the show, you know, you said that the bay was tiled with flounder, and I didn't believe you until a diver went down and shot one, and I saw the whole bay floor come alive. Jeez. That was over at Andy Grossman's last week. And so at this particular meeting, and Bill's estimate, when the water temperature's up about 75 degrees, and you have 16-inch fish coming into the bays, he's estimating the mortality rate, or the American Littoral Society in this area is estimating about 30%. Last week in Manahawkin, Doug Zemeckis jumped in a littoral meeting that he was at, had it about 60%. Now, how do we shorten a season with that? Because what we're not factoring in is the mortality fish. They weigh something, too. You can't tell flounder is dead because it doesn't have a swim bladder like sea bass does. And, you know, we don't have seminars on slitting them and letting the air out and all that. They are dead, 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 which is probably why our blue claw population is so spectacular, because they're eating on the flounder. But New Jersey's fishery depends on our flounder stock, and it is our big cash crop in Jersey. And everybody else is jealous because we have most fish. Now, your job is to help us keep them. Feel no pressure. It's all on you. I have so much faith in what you're going to do in this fishery. You're going to go down to Washington next week. You're going to come out. We're going to take 16-inch flounder. Everybody's going to have dinner and be happy. Right?
Take a break right now. Now you can think up a good answer.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Well, Bill Schillingford, Jeff Brust, and Robin Scott.
Mike took his hat off. He's getting hot. Look, he's sweating now. No,
once again, it seems like the conversation we have off the air sometimes is better
when it's getting heated in a good way.
No,
right?
Really. It's not
We're
really
all on the same team here.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of you.
Yeah.
You're one of the few that's not.
You were we were kidding you about having a comeback to what Robin said before, but I don't know if you really, you know.
She covered a lot, and
I tend to do that. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. You're allowed.
We only have 42 minutes of talk time on this show, so we just have to get it in.
I do want to touch on a couple of things.
Good.
I don't remember if it was Bill or Robin who brought it up first, but it's correct that most of the 18-inch plus fish are females.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Bill, you said that the males are gone before they get to 18. They just don't grow that big.
They die off.
No, they just don't get that big. Just like in humans, women generally don't get as big as men. In summer flounder,
so it's not
males don't
thing.
Get as big as females.
And diamondback terrapins. I mean, I work with that project with the Leatherback Trust and Drexel.
Oh, so you...
The fancy word is sexual dimorphism. The females get bigger than the males.
Yeah, okay. But wait a minute. They did it.
What happened to me? I'm only 5'2".
The Save the Flounder organization did some study. It had two scientists doing studies, and they were sampling the flounder being caught up and down the coast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't finding any males over 18 inches. They were getting...
Because they don't grow that big.
Was that Dr. Campbell?
They weren't finding any. What do you mean they don't grow? Stop growing.
They stop growing at a smaller size than females.
But they don't die off.
But they don't die off. We have information now that we have 16, 17, 18-year-old males that just aren't as big as a 16, 17, 18-year-old female.
That's a little different take on that.
That's a different take. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
No,
that's right. We've been talking about it in another way, that they die off, but. What you're saying, Jeff, is that they don't die off. They just don't get as big, and they get older and are smaller.
Correct.
If I can interrupt with a parallel with the diamondback terrapin program, obviously our focus there is to save the females because it's a different situation. They come to nest on the barrier islands from the salt marshes. They're a unique species in salt water. And the females get run over by the, you know, on the roads, right? But we're trying to preserve the female population. They're larger and they grow larger because they hold eggs. The males never grow past, whatever. So if it's a smaller turtle, I can't even tell if they're male or female until I look at their growth rate when they're a relative 3 to 4 years old, I can get them to achieve that growth rate in 18 months. Wow. Under super feeding, 43% protein, a lot of lights, a lot of petting, and rubbing and scrubbing their shells with toothbrushes and calcium. But
I've seen the pens there. They're unbelievable.
Yeah, they smell. They're terrible. green crabs are the only bait that are worse than turtles and dead minnows. But anyhow,
some bait through there one time. Everybody went, oh, my God. I forget what it was.
You had something dead in your pocket.
Did.
Yeah, you usually do, along with the sinkers and the snag hooks and all this thing.
Same stuff, right.
So the males
don't grow as large.
In fact, they live, Jeff, because the only thing that kills a male diamondback terrapin is they go for the same bait that blue crabs do. That's why we have those turtle excluders. On commercial crab traps now, because they go in there after bunker and things, and they'll drown. Obviously, they can't stay underwater for, they're not real good that way. 6 hours, they're beat. So the males live, but they don't grow. They stop growing. That's it.
Yep.
So they could be very old. They could be 30 or 40 years old, just like the females. They're just not as big. And flounder are the same way?
Well, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeff, is there some stuff? Can you have studies that show that they've really identified the age of a male flounder that was under 18 inches and was several years old?
Yes. Mike.
We're just going to have. Take a break in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, so we just went through the stock assessment for summer flounder. We put up the growth curves. We put up the maximum ages that we've seen. The maximum ages are about the same, so 17, 18-year-old fish, both males and females. But the males are just generally, at those older ages.
They're small.
They're smaller.
Wow.
So you also mentioned, Robin, the discard mortality rates. For the stock assessment, we use information from three studies. Granted, they're a little bit dated these days. They're from the 1990s, but it's showing.
I don't think I was even born then. Were you born then, Mike? Nah. No, we got to update that stuff.
So we use about 10% discard mortality.
Way higher than that.
I understand that you said that the Littoral Society is estimating 30 to 60%. I can expect during certain times of the year that in certain locations it's that high.
As I mentioned, an education process here, as I keep saying that I'm continuing on. I just got another installment of learning something, and that was the fact that Jeff Brostu is the, I'm going to say marine biologist, but not marine biologist,
but
research
scientist. He's our hero in New Jersey. He and Doug Zemecki.
For the state.
I'm getting him a cape.
Kind of threw this at us a couple months ago that we kind of believe that 18, when the males flounder get to be 18 inches, that they die off, but it's not really true. They just stop growing and they get older. So that was kind of a cool thing to learn. Then we started to talk about some implications of that as far as.
Got pretty dicey.
Yeah.
Yeah,
some of it we can't. Is there anything, can you add to any of that?
Can I ask you a question? Because this ties in with that. Back to the Littoral Society estimates, Jeff, would you agree that MRIC was never created? MRIC, for those listeners, is a very flawed way to measure how many fish are caught and all that kind of good stuff and varieties and things. I mean, it is an attempt. However, it was never meant to base our allotments of fish on, and now it is being used, so that's another chink in the armor here. But that the Littoral Society tagging all up and down the coast is a much better gauge of what's out there, what size, whatever. And our methods, whether for lack of money or whatever it happens to be, or the rigmarole you have to go through to get anything changed, my hat's off to you. I would go crazy and strangle people if I had to, drag things out there, upside down nets and wrong sizes of slots and all that. But anyhow, why are we not using something that was originally a NOAA program, as far as I understand, Littoral Society, right? I mean, it came from the government. Why aren't we using that when it's the most accurate? Is it because it actually tells the truth? What are we going to do about this?
Well, so, unless I'm missing something, and Bill, maybe you can fill me in, but the Littoral Society data does not estimate total harvest from the fishery. It gets sizes of the fish that are captured.
It doesn't get
but it does not get the total estimate of what has been harvested.
There's a piece of what you need missing.
Correct.
But wouldn't you be able to build a better estimate based on that than what we have now from the lack of data?
MRIP estimates the total harvest. We do also get lengths from the MRIP survey. But where we have the data, like with summer flounder, with tautog, with weakfish, with striped bass, we do use the ALS data in the stock assessment. So it is providing information to the stock assessment on what size is being captured by the fishery and what size is being harvested, what size is being released.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything in any document, and it could have been that I just missed it, where it said, and this was plugged in from there. So I always ask that question.
No, it's a fair question. We do use it where we have it available. We don't have it for all species. You know, some species, my understanding is ALS tags pretty much everything. But, the taggers decide what they want to tag.
Yeah, it's generally striped bass, flounder, then it goes on down from there. But the striped bass and flounder are really the two most popular.
Right.
I know
we use it. We used it for tautog for the last stock assessment. Yeah. We've used it for
weakfish. New Jersey has used the data, but the feds don't use the data.
Mm. And do they know that Bill? Do you know that Bill has tagged more fish than any other human being?
Than most of the rest of them combined, yes.
Yeah, than any other human being on the face of the earth. Over 20,000 fish, over 10,000 flounder now. He is a walking.
Are you in Guinness yet?
He should be. He's going to be. No, but, I mean, why would we not use that data?
The previous number one was Captain Al Anderson out of Rhode Island.
Okay.
And he had somewhere close to 40,000 fish tagged. Yeah. I'm not even near that. I'll be dead and gone by then.
No, we're keeping you alive.
Keep trying.
Like a long time. You're keeping him healthy.
Go, Bill. Go, right. Bill.
Can I take a break and get...
How about some of the people actually using DNA? How about this program? They actually do a DNA in freshwater and saltwater.
Yeah.
And they can do a diagram into what's really going on in the ocean.
DNA of the water or something like that.
The eDNA? Yeah. Environmental DNA?
Yeah.
So we just, the New Jersey Marine Fisheries, the New Jersey Ocean Trawl Survey, which goes out 5 times a year, just signed an agreement. We just decided to cooperate with, I can't remember who it is, unfortunately. Shoot. Good morning, Saturday. My brain's not working. But there's a study going on right now to collect eDNA. Mm-hmm. We will be providing samples to this study through the Ocean Trawl Survey.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about the fumbling because last week they were talking about turbines, and I kept trying to say windmills. You know, so I kept fumbling. No. And somebody said, no, they're turbines. Okay.
So there's going to be a flounder 23andMe box. You know, that you send away, you register your little flounder, and you find out something like that, huh?
So I hope so.
Yeah? Pretty neat. However,
good point, Noel.
We're talking
Thanks.
About business next so, year and keeping the second biggest industry in the state of New Jersey alive and viable. And there is a huge sense of, quickness about this whole thing. And that's what we're trying to help.
Bill Schillingford, Jeff Bruce, and Robin Scott. And on the line, I have Victor from Linwood.
I spoke to Robin last week. She said I could call in and give it a recipe for sea bass if I got enough time.
You got 2 minutes.
It's quick and simple. all you need is your sea bass, and we'll each one do individually. In one side of sea bass, a handful of string beans. Put it on. Aluminum foil, like 2 sheets of aluminum foil. This is to go on the grill or you put it in the oven. Anyways, you got your string beans, and then you put your sea bass on top, some extra virgin olive oil, some salt and pepper, some adobo, a little bit of Old Bay, squeeze some fresh lemon on there. I know I'm going quick. I'll give it again another time. And then some minced garlic, wrap it up, and just cook it on the grill for 12 minutes. And it comes out really good. You can put some you can put a little bit of beer on it, a little bit of Guinness if you want, but all the spices you want to put on sparingly.
Okay.
I mean, put some fresh squeezed lemon on there, but it comes out really good. I want to cook it on high, and I wanted to note that I went to the sea bass seminar with Doug last week at Bass Pro. There was only one other person there, but it was really interesting. I don't have my notes in front of me. I know we don't have time. So maybe next time I could call.
Okay.
Thanks right, for Victor. Going, Victor.
Thanks for calling, Victor.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye, lines.
Bill, you went to a meeting the other day, and you want to talk about that for me?
Yeah.
In Summers Point?
The Drag Island Association, which is trying to get the fishing access to the Drag Island there mm-hmm. at the Great Egg Bridge. We've been in existence for like 6 years. And we now nothing's been happening. But we had a meeting, the second meeting we had with the Summers Point Council yesterday, and Senator Van Drew sent a rep, and Senator Chris Brown sent a rep.
Cool.
We covered the history, and Pat showed them the Atlantic City Press front page front page article that said that the Drag Island thing was a success and was going to go forward and so forth and so on. But it never happened. There's really nothing going on that we can see.
I see.
The report that was written, the state paid $225,000 to get this report made and recommendations, which we were part of. We narrowed their recommendations down from 7 to 2, and it was presented, but we can't get it. They won't, right now, the state won't allow it to be public, but we're going to try to do something different to get, Pat's going to do something different to get that report. But right now, there's nothing going on, and we were hoping that, with the help of Senator Brown and Senator Van Drew, we can get something moving again.
Yeah.
And they pointed out, and rightly so, that the 9th Street Bridge money was the result of Congressman Lobiondo. Mm. So with Senator Van Drew now going to Congress, replacing him, maybe we can get some help in that direction.
Okay,
and
cool.
Hopefully the representative that was there was going to kind of give us some help in that area.
When's he actually goes into the office? It's February, is it?
January.
It's January?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's an interesting meeting. We got people involved, but we showed them the article. I mean, front page article of the Atlantic City Press. And, Chris Brown's rep had not even been aware of anything like that going on. But it wasn't in his district then. Yeah. It is now.
Gotcha.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
The public access... If they do something like we did on the bridge going into Ocean City, that'd be outstanding. But we narrowed it down to two choices, and both choices were, not terribly expensive, but they were going to be a very worthwhile project. And Summers Point City Council is well behind it. So,
did you put in my request to expand the footprint of Ray Scott's Dock and have a little bait and tackle shop right there at the foot of the bridge, Bill?
All right, Jeff. We're kind of. Where are we going? What's next? Let me put that with the. Got a couple meetings coming up, and with the state, we don't have one until January, right? Is that the next meeting, the state meeting?
For the state meeting, yeah. The next state meeting is Thursday, January 3rd,
right.
At the Galloway Library in Atlantic, mm-hmm. On Jimmy Leeds Road there.
Yes, down here.
The Marine Fisheries Council will be meeting. Haven't started really putting the agenda together yet for it. I'm sure they will be talking about the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council next week. Right. So next week is the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council down in Annapolis. It will be a joint meeting with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. The majority of the agenda is the joint meeting for Fluke and Seabass.
Yeah.
There's
NSCUP.
NSCUP, yes. Yeah. But there's a couple of addenda that are on the table for final action, looking to hopefully make management for Fluke, SCUP, Seabass easier than it has been in the past.
Yeah. Is that going to dominate the meeting?
Looking at the draft agenda, it looks like it's about two of the 3 days of the meeting. That's what I heard,
that there really wasn't going to be a lot of discussion on limits and sizes and all that type of thing, but I know they're going to slide that in.
Well, it's on the agenda.
Yeah.
It's on the agenda for 2 days.
The
joint meeting, the agenda, yeah. I don't remember exactly how much time each topic is going to take. They will start talking. Mm-hmm. They will start talking about the regulations for next year, but as we discussed at the beginning of the hour, a lot of that is not set in stone yet until we get the final results of the stock assessment, which will not be out until February, because the change in the recreational harvest numbers has changed the scale on both. Well, for summer flounder, we should be able to do it in February. For black sea bass, there hasn't been an assessment yet. They're looking to do the assessment sometime next year. And so it'll probably be, if there is a change, it will be a mid-year correction. Or that's what they're discussing, is if we need to change, it will be a mid-year correction next year after the stock assessment is complete. And once we know how the changed recreational harvest numbers affect the stock size, our interpretation of where the stock is.
So what that means is when you walk into your local tackle shop and says, is sea bass open or not? The owner opens the book and it says to be announced. And then they look at the things that are posted on their wall from Fish and Wildlife and go, I think so. I think it was open for 2 days, but we're not sure. It makes it difficult to communicate.
It very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that's on the table in one of these addenda is to sort of streamline the management process. And so that ASMFC can make regulations without going through a whole addendum.
Yeah, that would help.
Sea bass.
That's what I understood.
That's been a topic for the 11 years I've been on the committee. Streamlining the process has been a topic for 11 years.
Right. It certainly has. And we've gotten to the breaking point there these days. And so
it's just a lot of wasted time and energy.
Is there a high point? Is there something you can say is, or just a lot of busy stuff?
So from my perspective, from a staff perspective, the high point has been getting an administrator. I don't know if any of you have met Joe Cimino. He's been a fantastic addition to the team.
Awesome. Last week.
He came from Virginia. He was sort of the deputy director at Virginia Marine Resources Commission.
Yeah.
Where Fluke is big, where Menhaden is big, where they deal with a lot of the same issues that we do. He's been a fantastic addition, a huge anchor. So from a staff perspective, that's been my highlight.
Great.
Just a lot of trying to keep up with all the regulations and ASMFC.
He's got a lot of Virginia in him. We got to New Jerseyize that guy.
the former.
He's not far away.
We'll get him on the show.
He's not in the tempered zone. We're in it. We have.
I believe he's originally from New York.
Oh, really? Okay.
The former administrator, I can't think of his name right now, but he's on the ASMFC committee. He's got sea bass. He lives in Lewis now.
Yeah. He's really? Actually Brandon Muffley works for the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. Yeah, he left us for the council.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's got sea bass.
Mm-hmm.
He's on our side.
Yeah.
Yes.
He did a good job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you seem real excited about this, the new administrator. So
Yes.
I can tell that you're fired up about it. Yeah.
So for the last few years, at one point I was looking forward, and we lost everyone from our bureau chief all the way to the governor.
Major changes,
changed within 2 years.
Right.
And so... Yeah. We've been in a period of rebuilding and stabilizing for the last couple of years, and Joe has been a serious anchor.
All right, got to go, you guys.
Good.
Bill, thank you.
Not good that we're going.
Jeff, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Get you on again sometime.
Please.
If it's okay with you.
Thank you, Mike.
Robin, thank you. Be back next week here, Shep Talking Fishing on Air, back here on News Talk 1400. Talk to you next week. Thank you.